This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Jeff Martin has been around the digital signage industry for pretty much as long as the industry has existed, running the ops side of some very large retail networks. He was one of the co-founders of Sign Story, which at its peak ran screen networks in a wide range of groceries across the U.S. in the early to mid-2000s. That company was acquired in 2007 by CBS. It was a big deal at the time, with CBS paying more than $71 million for a digital signage company 11 years ago. In 2011, Martin went out on his own and got ahead of a trend towards managed services and solutions, founding what is marketed now as Right Media Solutions. Based in New England, the company runs the digital signage networks for multiple clients across all 50 states. I had a great chat with him about the old days of digital signage, particularly in grocery. We talked about what worked then and what works now. So Jeff, as I often do with people I'm chatting with, the first thing I tend to ask is, tell me about the company.
The company is Right Media Solutions. A lot of our information is available, obviously, online, website, and history. But
Don't make people go there.
So don't go there, or go there after to see
Go there after
to fact check to make sure it's the real news and not the fake news. You know, I started in this industry. It sort of is the easiest way to go through the elevator pitch of it back in 1999 for a company called Gerber Scientific in Connecticut. And I had started testing out the idea of digital signage with Gerber Scientific and a small team there. The reason Gerber Scientific was in that space is they were, at the time anyways, one of the largest resellers of 3M vinyl signage. They had cutters and printers to do such. And I was in a different industry, but a good friend of mine had just sold his company to Gerber Scientific and was looking for someone to help run this new business division that they were trying to start up with David Gerber, who was the president then of Gerber Scientific. Mm-hmm. So my initial involvement was really speccing it out with those very inexpensive 42-inch plasmas for about $10,000 each. And we vetted it out a number of different, just, if you will, sort of PowerPoint-type presentations, realized there was not a lot of options for software in the industry. I think we did something. It was a company that it had Side Street in his name, and it was up in the Northwest that initially we did some initial tests with. But regardless, we did an initial pilot with 5 liquor stores in Massachusetts and Connecticut, where we placed screens initially just sitting on the trade show type stands and placed the product in front of them and then used their POS data to see how that product moved versus other non-digital displays, and had quite a bit of delta positive for the digital systems. And we ended up rolling out while we're still with Gerber at that point, probably about.
So, but way back then, it was moving the sales needle, so to speak.
It was. And it was in the liquor industry, which, you know, was a very interesting industry to be in. More offline for that at some future date when we're at a show together. It was, you know, an exciting time. We ended up rolling, I want to say, and expanded the pilot is probably the best way to put it, to probably about 10 liquor stores. And we had maybe half a dozen pharmacies, standalone pharmacies. And then we probably had another half a dozen either liquor or pharmacy that were then grocery stores. And most of this was the East Coast. We did a little bit in California just to spread out. I think we did P&W markets.
And how far back was this?
This was back from 99 to 2001.
Wow.
And in 2001, Gerber decided they had a number of initiatives that they were working on that were much bigger than this. And they decided to take in venture capital funding from the state of Connecticut. There was a number of resources there and motivations for great rates for bringing in venture capital money at that time. So I believe it was Connecticut Innovations and Next Generation Ventures. I don't know if either one or both still exists, but they invested as well as a number of angels. And we all rolled out Venture Capital Sign Story LLC. I know that was one of the questions coming up, but I figured it was a great way to start into the background of our company.
Damn it, you beat me.
Yeah.
So it was a spin-out.
It was a spin-out. And at that juncture, we ended up rolling out to, I want to say, a little over 100 liquor stores that were standalone. Probably our biggest one owner being the New Hampshire State Liquor Commission. I hate to admit it. It was too many years ago to remember the exact number of the sites that we rolled out of theirs, but I want to say it was, you know, probably close to 40 or 50. And then we...
I was just going to ask, was this all your company, the spin-out, putting the equipment in and everything at no cost with the idea of, the old rev share model, or how did this work?
That is exactly what it was. And thank you for asking that question. So we sold both. I'd like to say we're a small enough network. I don't want to say we didn't need national buys, but we certainly did regional merchandising sales or combined with merchandising sales. And we did local regional sales, and we had our own sales force. Mm-hmm. So we did do that somewhat successfully, and we rolled out.
You must have had a lot of quizzical looks, though, from the liquor brands and others that were just like, "You're doing what?"
Well, they also were saying, you know, some would say, you know, "Talk to me when you have 1,000 locations," which is,
well, they still do that.
They do that today, every day. So that was some of the looks we got, but some were innovators. And again, if we hit regional representations, we had a lot of interest, and the needle was moving quite a bit for them. So they were happy.
Mm-hmm. So when you say the needle was moving, it was moving like 3% or it was like double digit to sales bumps?
I think it varied by product, mm-hmm. but both of those.
And was it strictly the sheer presence of a screen? Because going back almost 20 years, that was highly unusual. Whereas now it's, you know, can't get away from screens. Or did it have to do with the actual content on?
I think it was both. And we actually believe it even back then. It's hard to believe. Back in 2001 and 2002, we actually had a scanner attached where you could scan for information on the product that was underneath the screen, or products. So it usually wasn't one. Usually we'd advertise a number of them. So we actually had data at that point even coming back from scans.
That's one of the funniest things about what I see today, and I'm sure it amuses the hell out of you, is companies that come up with things like Lift and Learn and bring your product over and scan it, and some will appear up on a screen, you know, like they've invented fire.
It does hit me in the side sometimes when we get the new product. I'm like, okay, that, you know, almost 20 years ago we were doing that, but yeah, it's new today.
Yeah. Good for you. All right. Sorry, I keep interrupting, but this is funny.
We were pioneers. It felt like we're, you know, in covered wagons, you know, traversing the country, you know, looking out for Indians along the way. Mm-hmm. But
And every time you'd open up a new story, and I guess every year the plasma screens or eventually the LCD screens got a little bit cheaper and the PCs got a little bit cheaper, but the capital costs in the early days, that was like punitive.
Oh, it was. No question about it. And certainly... yes. At one juncture, we actually bought plasma screens from France and converted the power because they were so much less to buy from Europe.
Boy, why was that?
You have me. Maybe it was closer to the source. They were moving more product into Europe at the time than the U.S. I actually had to work with one of our sales folks who knew French to translate to get the deal done. It's crazy, you know, if you go back that far, you know, to think of that.
Yeah, you do what you got
to
do.
We did. It was enough savings, even with the shipping over here, to make sense. And we're buying enough quantity that it made sense at the time to do it.
Were you like EBITDA positive or cash flow positive doing all this? Or were the angel investors going, hey, guys?
Well, that's all details, Dave. You know, I'm just, I was on the operations side at that time. So. How's that for avoiding the answer you're looking for?
You just put hands over your ears and go la, 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 la. Until
exactly.
They went away.
So that leads to the better part of the story. So we were sort of trudging along in this, you know, mostly in liquor and partially in pharmacy and a little bit in supermarket. And a company came along in 2003 that saw one of our screens in one of the Connecticut liquor stores. In fact, it was either a BevMax or one of the other ones, because we had a few different of their stores. And their company name was New Communications, and it had the folks from original ACK Media folks had started up this new venture. Again, New Communications was their name. Do you know anything about ACK Media? Mm-hmm. Does that ring any bells? So nope. ACK Media were the folks that started the in-store in some ways in grocery with the shopping cart sort of license plate and shelf license plate ads that eventually led to the automatic coupon dispenser with the little blinking red light where you can pull out the savings.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they sold, I believe this is all publicly, I know it's publicly available. They sold to Heritage Media in the somewhere in the $700+ million range back in, I think, 97, 98. And then Heritage sold to News America Marketing a year or two later for $1.2 billion back then. So the original president of ACK Media became, as a part of this new company, became our chairman of the board. And their head of operations became our CEO. And a couple of us that were left from the Sign Story side, including myself, stayed on with the company.
But it was still called...
Sign Story. Yeah,
Sign Story. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So initially we tested with one of the West Coast grocery retailers and with exclusivity for almost 16 months of where someone offered them a more shiny, bright object than ours, that company that really never delivered much of anything. And at that point, we went out of our exclusivity with them and started selling nationally to grocery. And we were able to get a deal with Albertsons at the time. So Albertsons had at that time the four chains, Albertsons, Jewel Osco, Acme, and Star, and Shaw's on the Northeast. And so we were interested in the center store. And actually at the same time, it was PRN, now back PRN at the time, was doing the front end. So we combined for a solution for their stores. At this juncture, we had operated off of dial-up. We had moved to DSL. And then eventually with our entry in both into Albertsons as well as other markets, we actually had entered into installing satellites. So we've been down the few paths related to in-store communications as well as riding on the backbone, which obviously in this case with Albertsons was their satellite network, US Satellite. I've done a whole bunch of that as well, but we rolled out all their chains. I want to say we had 2,200 stores just with the Albertsons chains. Then we rolled out probably another, I think we had close to double digits of different grocery retailers across the states. I want to say we're in 32 states with maybe close to 10 different grocery chains operating for a number of years. In 2007, we were buying a company that had contracts to two smaller grocery chains and raising probably capital round number 4 or 5. And we went to CBS, who at that point, the broadcast company, who had a content agreement with us and had been making some custom grocery content and change for some, running some of their promos for their different shows, and asked them if they'd like to participate. And lo and behold, probably about 30 days later, they ended up buying us for $71.5 million, I think was the number. And we became CBS OuterNet as a part of CBS Broadcast. At that time, I already had industry connections where we had been working at Sign Story on a deal to get into upgrade the GameStop TV network, which at that point was big old boxy CRTs and DVD players. And with now the new larger company that had a larger sales force, we were able to actually join in and close that deal with GameStop right off the go in 2007. And we ended up upgrading that network at the end of 2007 into 2008. The core staff that we had with Sign Story ended up staying on for about 4 years with CBS. I thought CBS was very good to us. You know, it was a good company to work for. The economy went in a direction not favorable for any business, really, let alone the out of home at that time. Mm-hmm. And a few of us were offered a limited number of jobs to come down to New York, but all of us had families and kids in school up here in more Boston area. So we were trying to figure out what to do. And a couple of the bosses I had within CBS said, well, you know, why don't you end up starting a company that, you know, does the services for digital signage, you know, since you've been doing that for so long, Jeff? And I said, well, you'd be okay with that? And I said, sure. Well, we're finishing up our work with CBS and Incorporated Right Solutions, which is a DBA Right Media Solutions. And our first business was doing the non-contractual work that we had been doing at CBS for GameStop, which is more of the store resets, closings, remodels related to the GameStop TV screens for GameStop. And so that's...
So you came out of the gate with, you know, started a business with...
Yeah, it was really great. We were able to save the core group of jobs that we had, you know, all the way through from Sign Story, CBS, and now Right Media Solutions. It's hard to believe. No one's jumped ship despite working together with me all these years. I actually do. How did you know that? Right? That's right. I told you our last call.
Told me.
And probably that's what keeps the peace. thank you for remembering that.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
We continued on that business and have grown it over time. We ended up getting back directly from GameStop the support business, which is, you know, the monitoring and support. And eventually, about a year ago, ended up taking over the end-to-end running of the network. And I've saved the advertising, which is done by GameStop and some of GameStop's representatives. We run that network end-to-end. In the mix, we went back into grocery for a while and designed and installed a network there and ran it for a while. That network sold a little over a year ago. So we're not involved in that right now on a day-to-day basis anyway. And we've been expanding into some other areas, which are exciting and interesting.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So you've primarily been an ops guy all this time? So you weren't involved on the media sales or anything else?
You say that, and I smile and giggle. When I was with Sign Story, there probably wasn't many a presentation that we made that didn't involve me, you know, traveling to that engagement and, you know, doing the better part of helping the media owners understand, you know, how we'd be doing it and have confidence that we would deliver what we were claiming. So,
right. You're effectively the sales engineer and VP ops at the same time. So I'm curious, in the old days of Sign Story, when you're putting this in so many different grocery chains, what were you putting in there in terms of where were the screens? Why were they there? What were they doing? And were they making an impact?
In what order do I answer the question? I'd like to think they were making an impact because we stayed in business as long as we did and we were able to sell onto the screens. And we had obviously content providers like CBS wanting to be extending their reach in there. So mm-hmm. I'm sort of answering it in reverse. So where we had the screens varied depending on the grocery retailer. And Albertsons, we were more in the center store. So in the back main aisle, depending on the directional flow within the grocery store, which is typically from produce to the other sections. You know, we'd have a screen facing in, you know, that direction that folks would be walking, typically over and above one of those open refrigerated cases, so that when they restocked the shelves at night, they didn't take out the screen, so we could keep it low enough, you know, easy to look at. We had directional and ambient sound adjusting audio with those screens. And we had another one typically that was in produce. So when you're entering produce, you know, there'd be a presence there as well. For some of the other grocery retailers, we would have it in the deli sections. So we'd have it either behind the deli counter or out near the counter. I believe I don't know what the exact number was, but we also had screens in the pharmacy section where some of the grocery retailers had pharmacy as well.
Mm-hmm. I go into grocery most days. I'm up in Canada, so we just got electricity up here recently, so we don't have a lot of digital signage. But where I have seen it, it tends to be at the deli counter and a little bit of end caps, that sort of thing. Did you learn much over, you know, what was going on in the late 2000s versus what goes on now? What Sign Story was doing then, would that work now? Or does anybody really even do it that way?
I think the answer is yes to both. I think that the lessons learned, I mean, the easy lesson learned you mentioned a while ago is that, you know, we went from a screen cost of $10,000 plus per 42-inch to, you know, roughly with a commercial 55-inch, you know, truly commercials, you know, just north of $1,000. So, you know, it's, you know, and same with the, obviously the players and the solid state nature where we're just using standard window boxes or embed window boxes to start with. We're certainly the management systems that are now behind them and the ability to control a network is just so much easier and less expensive than it used to be. So obviously the cost to be on that system for an advertiser, you know, is much easier now because the offsetting of the infrastructure cost of the system is so much lower. I think you can get power on out, you can do Wi-Fi. You know, my God, Wi-Fi. You know, no, it wasn't there in the dial-up days. The other thing I would say, and it's pretty obvious, I mean, is the content that's available to put on those screens and the changeability of that content is, you know, it's just always been so important. I mean, having CBS as a content partner at the time was just such a big thing. You know, it was actually, you know, very grabbing and interesting. Mm-hmm. The typical things of weather, you know, obviously being, you know, everybody loves the weather. I mean, everyone's always checking. Even if you're looking out the window, why not check on my app as well? You know, am I really seeing what's happening?
Is there a screen location and type that you found through the years in the varied types of retail that you worked in where that particular one is fundamental? If you're going to do a store, you need to have this.
That's a great question. I think, you know, the world can exist. I hate to say it because it's, you know, we pays the bills. I mean, the world can exist without the digital, but yeah, the question is why, you know, if all things being equal, and if I'm trying to engage, you know, whether it's my staff, whether it's my client, whether it's my customer's customer to engage more, what's going to catch them? Is it, you know, if I'm trying to bring them in, for example, in a mall environment into my store, is my static poster I'm putting there in my name placard of my business bringing them in? Is a product sitting there or is there a motion graphic that says, hey, not only is my product here, you know, in use, but, you know, here's a use you may not have thought of using it for, you know, come on in and get one. So I think an automatic one is, you know, it's the human bug light. Come on in. You know, there's interesting ways to use our product and new features about our product that's in here that we can tell you about, you know, both in the store and an in-store screen. But initially getting them in there, just even making the poster just seems like such an obvious. The compliance is just, you know, not there for, you know, creative shipping, it getting up where it needs to be in the time frame it needs to be up there for the clients.
Yeah, it's funny. You don't hear that much discussion really about compliance and until you start to explain it to people what compliance actually means and how critical it is, because, you know, you get big problems, particularly in something like a wireless store where you can have, you know, plans that are changing weekly or even faster than that. And how the hell do you stay on top of that?
That's a huge challenge out there, and it's a huge benefit now that, again, going back to the cost structure, now that the costs are so much lower, the screens last longer. You know, if it's not a built-in player, the players that aren't built-in last longer. Again, you go back to power and Wi-Fi, how much power it takes to power these systems has gone way down. And, you know, the ability to operate on Wi-Fi, you know, takes away one extra hardwiring event. So where you can plug them in, they work.
One of the things that's bubbled up in the many years that you've been involved is what seems to be a real shift by end users to wanting full service providers, you know, in the same way that they've outsourced other aspects of their business, maybe accounting or HR, whatever it may be. I hear over and over again that companies absolutely want their digital communications, particularly in store, worried about by somebody else.
Even though there's common skill sets, I'd like to think what we've learned, you know, it feels like I'm just, you know, wearing the, you know, the cowboy hat and still just dusting off. But, you know, after 19 years, almost 20 in the industry, I think what, you know, we've learned through the different companies and the different networks provided is, even though it sounds real simple to do it, to run an end-to-end digital network, it isn't. There's a lot of moving parts. There's what's you know, maintenance, whether that's maintenance on keeping the screen content active or making sure that the communications are up and running, whether the, you know, again, the system within those electronic components are working correctly. And it's a lot of communication. We spend a lot of time previewing content that is running on the system that supposedly is already vetted out. And I want to say almost an everyday basis, we're communicating back with our clients about, hey, you know, this piece of content isn't in, you know, the, you haven't uploaded it, so it's not going to be playing until you upload it. There's still human factor, and you know, that doesn't become automatic for you unless you've been running a network for years.
You started this business with the idea of running networks for other companies. In that time, you now have software companies, CMS software companies are saying, yeah, we do turnkey services. You have display companies saying, yeah, we do turnkey services. And you have integrators who previously would have done the planning and the rollout and everything else. And then they pretty much walk away, or they will perhaps monitor the networks for uptime and roll a truck if need be, but not really do the managed services piece like content distribution and testing and all that stuff. Now they do it. So you've got all these competitors. How do you?
It's a great question. And it's important. I mean, I think that with any industry, you have to stay relevant to what's changing in the industry, as opposed to just, I think you even had a podcast on this that I listened to recently where someone was speaking to this of five different points. And I'm not going to remember, I apologize. They're probably integrated and burned into my brain, but the podcast isn't. But the compelling changes of how you need to change your offering to adjust to market conditions. So just jumping in there and saying, you know, we can throw a sign up and we can run a CMS on it. That's great. But you know, what's the business model and the ROI for your customer, your client? And how is that design going to, you know, of where we're putting the screen, of what's going to run on the screen and the maintenance content, maintenance of the screen uptime, how is that going to play in? And are we beginning to look to the future of how to monetize, bring in other monetization channels into it, you know, whether that is private marketplace or whether that's, you know, heading on the programmatic side. Those are things that, you know, our offerings that we're working on integrating into our solutions so that we keep ahead of that. So we're just not copying what's out there. We're continuing to push forward. And one of those areas, and it'll be questioned quite a bit, is, and we have quite a large network, as we've made the announcement, you know, we've moved and maintained a very large Chromebox network, probably one of the largest ones out there. It was the largest at the time we rolled it out. Just some of the security features, the management features that are built into that, and the expandability features through API are pretty big.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of networks, at least that I'm aware of, that have rolled out on Chrome OS, even though there was a whole bunch of excitement and intrigue about the idea of Google being involved in this space at all. This big Chrome rollout, is that the second one.
Coca-Cola? So, and I should, if you can believe it, I've been looking to release this Chromebox rollout for just over a year now, and actually had some communications yesterday that I might actually have a go ahead to do such. And they said within a day or two, I'll say within a week or two. So, well, exactly.
So who is it?
I'm getting the blessing. So I can't, I would have already told the industry if I could. Yes. It's a retail.
It's in retail though. Okay. And what's the scale of it? Because people tend to think that Chromeboxes are out in, you know,
The scale is just under 3,900.
150 there and so on.
This particular retailer is in every state.
Wow. Okay. So that's a substantial.
I mean, depends who you die. To me, it is. I mean, there's other players that would say, well, you know, that's kind of small for us. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. No, it's a great invoice customer. I'm sure it's a happy one.
You know, we're thrilled to do it. And it's operating, you know, very well right now. So we're happy with it.
Mm. Do you see more of that happening using Chrome? Because again, it seems like it's out there, but I don't see a lot of adoption, and I don't see Google really kind of running hard with it because,
I mean, they're supporting it. I mean, the biggest Chrome experience is definitely for Google is education space. But that sort of solidifies their commitment to the Chrome OS. Mm-hmm. Which I know there's been a lot of debate on, and I know there's been podcasts on the debate as well.
Right.
So, you know, for us, our experience in... I don't think so. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball.
But it's not going away. But,
you know, from our communications, yeah, we have regular communication with the folks at Google, and we work together with them to forward the product. You know, to answer your earlier question on the how do we differentiate ourselves, that we're staying on top of, you know, making sure that we're looking forward to what features can be added, whether that's adding additional, you know, revenue sources or whether it's additional features.
Mm-hmm. What about system on chip? I've talked to some other companies who are using so-called smart displays, regardless who the manufacturer may be, and they have said that as a solutions provider, they tend to love these things because they remove so many points of failure, even stupid things like HDMI cables that can come loose and so on. And
we haven't tested in the past those solutions. Again, it becomes in a there's still, even it goes back to earlier, like you said, with the scanner. You know, people are reinventing the whether it's lift and learn or otherwise, it's a brand new thing. So that I know this is more mm-hmm. integrated where we had integrated players before. The only sort of blinking light for me on it, and I'm trying to get more on board with it, was some of the testing we're doing, which I guess I'm saying by short isn't that we're against it. It just is, it's still in testing phase for us, is that if the system and the chip goes down, then I'm replacing a screen.
Yeah, right. Yeah, certainly I've asked that question, and the general response I've had is, yeah, but they don't go down. It's just like your processor on your smartphone doesn't tend to die. Yeah, it's your battery and other things, but not the processor.
The processor is doing different things than our phones are. But, you know, I understand the concept, but I guess that's where I struggle a little bit, Dave, on that, isn't that it just needs to be vetted a little bit more. I mean, I like getting rid of the cables and the other player. I know the capabilities are increasing on that, on the chips, but they still don't have all the features that a commercial player has.
Right.
How I was prepared
big is your
question.
Company at this
We're,
point?
We're a mid-market size working company. With you? Mid-market size company. We have our core group, and we
Good
have,
for you studied.
As we expand and contract for different projects, uh-huh. we have a number of folks both on 1099 and W-2 that they come in and out for that. And what's great about the space we're in and the business park we're in Salem is they have over 1 million square feet where we can expand and contract into. So we don't have to, we can be just right size for where we're at any given time. How is that for avoiding a direct number question, mm-hmm. number answer?
Mm-hmm. Pretty good. So you started at the very back when we turned the recorder on. You were going to say where
they
find you on the web. So let's wrap
com.
This up by saying, where do they find you on the web?
Yeah. Well, you know, Right Solutions.
That was a clever
a little
name.
Bit clever too. We have some. We probably should connect in a number of months. We have some announcements that I just can't make yet that relate to part of our conversation and expanding. But some other, you know, fun names coming up as well, too, where you can find us. an easy lifting one.
Yeah, well, Right Solutions was probably a better name than Wrong Solutions.
Dave, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for your time. That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.